Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. Explore the mind of MLB All-Star, Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove winner, Brett Boone, as he sits down with his friends from the world of professional sports. Now up to bat, Brett Boone.
And we're joined right now by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Brett, the host of the Brett Boone Podcast, featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. Insider calls presented by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers the professional-grade products you need delivered when and where you need them. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. And Boone, I wanted to start with a fun question. So last night, first inning, Miguel Andujar hits a triple deep into Triples Alley at Oracle Park. And then he's standing on third. He waves over and says, "Save that ball for me." Turned out it was his 500th career hit. And Don and Mud didn't realize it at the time, but they figured it out. What did you do? Do you still have some of your career milestones, 100th home run, 200th, 250th, 1,000th hit? Like, what happens to those as you finish up with your career?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you get your first hit. Well, they get it for you, and they usually, you know, pretend like... Yeah.
The third of the fan. Yeah.
Right. So they get your first, you get your first homer, and all those miles, you're right on, all those milestones, your 100th homer, your 200th homer, 1,000th hit, 1,500th hit. You get them all, and then you kind of collect them, and you hope you don't lose them. But that those are big numbers. I mean, you don't think it at the time as a player. I always wanted to downplay it, like, oh no, I don't need my 500th. I'm going to get 5,000. I don't need my 1,000th. I'm going to, you know, I've got thousands more to get. But after the game, hey, did you get that ball?
Yeah, I need that ball.
I need that ball, because as cool as I was trying to play it, yes, those things are cool. You never get them back. And yeah, 500, that's a milestone. Get that 500. You might not get that 1,000, so get that 500. So I thought it was cool. Yeah, and I caught Mud late in the broadcast saying, well, and you know, Donnie, if he gets another hit here, it will be his 503rd.
That's right.
And I said, what does that have to do with anything? Because I had missed the first inning. So yeah, now that story tracks.
So let me ask you, was there ever an internal competition between you, your brother, your dad, your grandpa about your career numbers and where they ended up at the end?
Well, in the end, there was really no competition.
You were ahead, right?
It didn't matter. Yeah. Well, I pretty much doubled all of them. No, I'm kidding. No, there really wasn't any competition, and that's the relationship. Growing up with my brother, and you know, that's who usually is a rival of yours. We were never rivals. I mean, Aaron was 4 years younger than me. We never played Little League together. We never played college baseball, high school baseball together, because he was always, as I was leaving high school, he was coming into high school. As I was leaving college, he was about ready to go to college. The first time we ever played on the same field together was in the big leagues, and that was 1998 in Cincinnati. He was my third baseman for a year, and that was the first time we played with or against each other, and we never had competition. We really didn't. It was always a mutual, you know, I was always trying to help my little brother growing up. I'd always let him tag along and play with us. And in the big leagues, it was more of encouraging. It was, yeah, when we played against each other, it wasn't about an individual who was going to, you know, get three hits tonight, hit a homer. There was a big competition in our teams as far as who was going to win. Even last year when I went back on the field with Texas, we played the Yankees. I told my guys in that hitters meeting, let's beat the crap out of this Yankee team. And he kind of liked, on the other side, he likes kind of beating me because I'm on the other team. But from an individual standpoint, there was never a rivalry or I've got more home runs than you. I've got more ribbies than you this year. No, it was always a very supportive relationship when it came to on the field from an individual perspective.
Talking to Brett Boone here on Ben and Woods this morning, and the avenue that I wanted to go down is an interesting one. I think we've talked to you before. You know, with the PitchCom, it's hard to steal signs, but the new thing that everyone is really trying to do is either look in the glove for the pitch grip and then signal to the hitter from second base. They were having base coaches were doing it, and they had to readjust the rules, because so teams got really good at it. You had not been in a big league clubhouse in a while. You got back into the big league clubhouse last year. What is the level of paranoia right now in the game of baseball about things like this?
It's pretty common now with the technology they have and the camera angles and how good the cameras are. You can really get in. So it's the onus is put on the pitcher now. PitchCom, you're right. Can't steal signs like you used to.
Yep.
You know, everybody still talks about stealing signs in 2000, you know, with the Houston thing. I still laugh about the Houston thing when everybody else was doing the same thing. They just didn't get caught. You're trying to find any edge you can. And if a pitcher is giving it away, you're going to find it. You're going to find the grip. We would go into every series, and we've got four potential guys on the other team with potential tells for us to see. And we'd have every camera angle because, you know, not only is the technology great, but the amount of staff you have looking for one thing is unbelievable. So we'd give it to the player. Some players are really good at discerning the information. They're really good at picking up on little tells that the pitcher has. And those guys would use it. Some guys are like, you know, I don't see that. So they're not going to use it when they're out there. And then the players communicate. It's like, hey, if I got it, you know, this is the signal I'll give you. The thing that blows me away is the telegraphing of the pitches, the way these guys are waving their arms. And I just sit there and not roll my eyes, but almost in awe of the audacity of the players to be relaying pitches the way they do today. I just think
They're not slick about it at all. Like
I think back and I go,
their helmets.
Wow.
And it's crazy. Like Josh Naylor, I saw a couple weeks ago, was like jumping up and down.
It gets to a point where they're almost mocking you. Like, yes. I really don't have the signs, but I'm trying to distract you to make you think I do have the signs.
Which is annoying. It's annoying.
Well, but it's the way the game is today, too. And it's so policed by the umpires. It used to be an eye for an eye. I'd stand on second base, and one of my secondary jobs was to watch for stuff like this.
Yes.
If I had an inkling that you were picking signs from my catcher, my pit, wherever you were getting the sign from, and relaying it to a hitter, I'd walk over to second base. I'd have a little conversation with you. I said, "Listen, I think you're relaying something. If I find out you are, there's going to be a problem." And those times that there were a problem, I'm going to walk to Norm Charlton, let's say.
Oh, God.
Tell him I'm going to give you a warning, and all of a sudden it's going to be like, all right, let's mix it up and see if they're still giving the same signal. If they did, well, then somebody's going to get hit right in the neck, and it's going to be a part of the game. Now, that being said, if I'm at second base, and by the way, I'm just full disclosure, I wasn't one of those guys that was really good at it. Yeah. And I was nervous because when you have a runner, in scoring position, I know how important it is as a hitter to get it right. Because if I'm hitting and I've got a guy out there I trust with the signs and he's relaying them to me, oh, that's what I want. But that guy out there, that's kind of me. If I'm out at second base, I'm like, I don't know if I trust this guy. And this is a ribby opportunity. I'd rather go on my own. So don't give me the signs. So I was kind of nervous out there giving the signs once I'd get them. But I'll tell you, if I got caught doing it, and it could be just a look from that second baseman like, Booney, I know there's going to be stuff. There's going to be payback, and I'm going to have to wear it. So if I get caught doing it and I get drilled in the ribs my next at bat, there's no fight. There's no, you know, a lot of times today we like to give you the stare out. I just yell at the TV all the time. If we're going to have all this, go get him.
Go get him.
If you're going to stay, go get him and let's have a full fight. Let's get it out of our system, tip our caps, and move on. Nobody goes and gets him, though. It's always the fake, oh, I'm mad at you. Oh, here come the benches. It's if Framber Valdez yesterday, if everybody was watching, quit bitching about it. Go get him.
Go get him.
I don't want to hear about how he's mean and he's a jerk for hitting me. Well, go get him. And then we're done with it. That's the way we handle things. The thing that's tough in today's game, the way these guys give signs, is you can't do anything about it.
Right.
Because then the umpires will throw you out of the game.
Yeah.
They used to have a little discretion like, hey, we'll let these guys figure it out on their own. We won't let it get carried away, but it's an eye for an eye. And that's the way we handle things. So I don't put the onus on the players. It's like, what are we going to do about it? We can't do anything about it because I'll get thrown out of the game. I'm the start pitcher. I've got good stuff today. I can't afford, for the sake of getting back at somebody, to lose a game. So I understand the player's perspective. And if I was playing today, I guess I'd be doing the same thing. It's like, okay, it's acceptable. Nobody gets in trouble for it. Yeah. So, hey, if I've got fastball away, I'm just going to kind of give you my, you know, put my hand in the sky and find out whatever our code is and just do it. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. So go ahead and do it. That's just the way the game is. They talk about unwritten rules. Unwritten rules are established by the players of the current game. If they decide the unwritten rules are the way they are and there's no eye for an eye, well, then that's the rules. And who cares what Brett Boone and 15 years ago what our rules were? Because we're not on the field now. It's their game today.
Booney, did you ever get any blowback? Because Booney had a lot. If you didn't watch Booney play, he had flair. Like he would hit a bomb.
The Booney
bat flip was a real thing. Did that ever blow back on you or your teammates?
You would think it would have. Never.
Never.
Never one time did I get hit for a bat flip.
That blows my mind, that I know in that era.
I tried to do it, and I tried to keep the line moving. I would never show any emotion running around the bases. My bat flip was kind of a part of my follow-through, and I'd let you know I got you. I'll let you know I got you, but I'm on the way. I'm not going to stand there and look at it. I wouldn't assume everybody liked it. I started doing it when some pitchers started to show emotions. I remember my rookie year, Dennis Eckerle would punch me out and shoot me, and I'd look at him, and I don't like that. But Dennis Eckerle, and I get it. And then I kind of, you know, later in my career, probably at about 2000, I started kind of bat flipping here and there, and I tried. I got to Seattle, and my teammates loved it. They're like, you got to keep bat flipping. There was one guy that didn't like it, and that was, I'm trying to think. Aaron Seeley, who I loved, was a great teammate on the early 2000 Mariners. He was one of our starters. And he said, Booney, do me a favor. He said, if we ever play against each other and you take me deep, he said, please don't bat flip on me.
Sorry about
that. And I said, Aaron, you know what? Because I have so much respect for you, if that ever happens, and you're not thinking it'll ever happen, I won't. And I'll tell you what, that day came in Anaheim Stadium, and I took him way deep. And I just laid the bat down.
You remember. It wasn't instinctual. You remembered and didn't do it.
I remember. He tipped his cap to me after the game. And he wouldn't have minded if I did it.
Yeah, but.
I remembered the conversation.
That's amazing.
You know, it's interesting.
That's amazing.
I really thought you were going to say, I threw that bat 50 feet into the sky. And because you said it was almost part of your follow-through, I love those. Like Manny's celebration, his lean back.
The lean back.
It's a home run. It's just a part of his follow-through. But as he leans back, kind of admires it for a second. I love that better than a bat flip, actually.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Which is amazing. Brett Boone with us. Insider Calls presented by Granger. Let me ask you about Fernando Tatis Jr. Craig Stammen dropped him to fifth in the order. Lowest he's hit since his rookie season. He handled it, at least publicly, pretty well. But what is that like for a big leaguer when you're used to hitting 1, 2, or 3, and all of a sudden you see the lineup and you're at 5? What's the emotions like?
Well, the difference is in my day, 5 was a very big time position. You were.
It's not a demotion.
You're an RBI guy, right? If you're 3, 4, you know, 3, you're the best hitter on the team. 4, you're our big boy. You're our home run hitter. 5, you're one of our main ribby guys. So 5 wasn't a demotion. That was kind of in one of the big slots. Today, I understand what you're saying. 1, 2, and 3 has become the big slots. You don't handle it. I mean, the longer you play, I remember the first time it happened to me at the end of my career. And you have to be honest with yourself and look in the mirror and see what you're bringing to the table. And at the time, you don't like it, you know. And I remember at the end, they hit me 6th one day, and I thought, wait a minute, I hit 3rd every day. You know, I hit 3rd. I've been hitting 3rd on this Seattle team for 4 years, and you're going to hit me 6th? How dare you? Well, there's some self-reflecting. You got to look in the mirror and say, it's better for the team if I hit 6th right now. These guys are doing a better job than me. But yes, your ego comes into play without a doubt. I had it. Everybody has one. But at this point in the season, I'm looking at Fernando Tatis, and I know he's not hitting 160 like some guys are right now. He's hitting 250. He's staying alive from an average perspective. But for what you expect him to bring to the table, I just watch him as a hitter. He is as lost as you can possibly be as a hitter. He's got no clue. I watched his last at bat last night where he got jammed really bad on just a decent pitch inside. And just the body language, is like, what are we doing here? This is Fernando Tatis, star player.
After the swing.
Cover the media guide. It's almost like he's not there. It's as bad as I've ever seen him look. I've been a Fernando Tatis guy since the beginning, thinking this guy's the limit, putting him in that Acuna category with Atlanta. He's going to be one of those guys. Right now, that guy's not there. He's in between pitches. The thing about it, in what we all go through, because I've been there, trust me, he's not recognizing any pitches. He has no clue what they're going to throw him because they're getting him out with everything. He's worried about the home run. We all do. If we're home run hitters and we don't have a homer and it's the beginning of May, we start to go, am I ever going to hit another homer? Well, just with your experience, you know you will hit a homer too one day. But he's thinking right now he's never going to hit another home run. He's feeling it. You know, he's the franchise guy. And he's just not getting it done right now. Good for him is he's going through this and the Padres are picking him up and have one of the best records in baseball. It's a lot easier going through your struggles when you're one of the main guys, when your team's winning games every day. The opposite, when you're losing games and you're the main guy and you're not doing anything, that is the worst possible spot to be in. But I just see him. He's not recognizing pitches. He's not differentiating between a fastball and a slider. So everything comes out of the hand, looks like the same pitch. So if they throw him three sliders, he thinks they're three fastballs out of the hands, and you're seeing a lot of big, messy swing and a miss. So he's got to get something going. He's got to get to a point where he can get that front foot down and recognize pitches before, you know, and the last thing I'd be worrying about if I were him right now is how many homers I have. You start to have quality at-bats to get back. Once you start having quality at-bats, the home runs will come because his skill set's too big.